And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Hey, everybody out there, good evening, wherever you are in the world currently, and welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, let's take that one step further, helping you reclaim that which you have always been and who you are. Very, very happy to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you've been following me for some time, you know that each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to integrating spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the websites. The first one is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, or www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. Either way, I'll be able to see your comments. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break, and then you'll just have wonderful, wonderful discussions. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, no worries. That's okay. This broadcast will be posted again on the BBS Radio website, so then you can go back and listen again, or maybe even check into the archives for previous shows. And again, these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Well, I am proud to say that I'm in my sixth year with BBS Radio, and these broadcasts have always focused on, as I said, this continued integration of spirituality and our mental health. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health, it is very essential. Because quite often our minds interpret what we take in through our senses. And based on our previous experiences and our education levels and upbringing and so forth, our mind's interpretation often fail to capture a more accurate understanding of deeper lessons and realities and greater truths, because our egos, which are very self-centered and limited, our egos come in and they kind of take over, and they keep us from knowing ourselves as vast and eternal souls and living in forgiveness, gratitude, bliss, and love. Now, admittedly, it is our egos that lead us astray with all kinds of thoughts and selfish pursuits, lower level consciousness, if you will, which is always bound by time and space and causation. And yet, how often are we guilty of not paying attention to our egos and our mind's distorted templates for teaching us something more about ourselves and showing us where our healing and transformation are still needed? Because as we look into our hearts, excuse me there, and we might find a lot of unforgiveness, or we might find some grudges that we're hanging on to, or maybe bitterness, or what about a lack of gratitude or harshness, or what about mean-spiritedness, or an overall hatred for others, and maybe even an overall hatred of ourselves. I mean, these are all possibilities, but again, the ego shows us these things, but we have to be open. We have to be teachable. We have to be willing to look at some harsh things in our lives and just admit to ourselves, okay, this has to go. This has to heal. Because, at the end of the day, as I keep saying, we are souls. But what is keeping us from fully embracing that and seeing ourselves for who we truly are, as well as seeing that in other people? Because, there is a huge difference out there between, let's say, worldly love, which is probably most familiar to us, and godly or divine love. Now, according to my teacher and dear friend, we often use that term, I love you, but that kind of love is conditional because it's temporary and it changes as it goes back and forth of conflicting emotions of the mind, such as envy, jealousy, and hatred. However, on the other hand, godly or divine love, it's a love that's not entangled in the human emotions of the mind, because divine love is eternal. It's not conditional and helps us and others purify our minds by realizing our oneness in relation to all people and all things. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. As you know what's going to come next, folks. It can all be summed up in one word. Say it with me. Namaste. That's right, namaste, which roughly translated means because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. And that's very important. How we treat others, it's going to show up in our relationships. And the integration of spirituality and our mental health begins here. Because whenever we examine and implement a oneness integration, let's just say, we come face to face with the deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in our relationships. It's inevitable that they're going to show up because it's teaching us, where else do I need to heal? What else do I need to, or I should say, who else do we need to forgive? And so forth. And in addition, we may believe that we will find happiness and joy and contentment, only to discover that the larger the ego becomes, the greater the sorrows are sown. Because you see, eventually our egos bring us back to coming to terms with the relationships in our lives, like I said, especially our woundedness within our families or our coworkers. And what about our friends and even other relationships? But godly or divine love heals and transforms those wounds into something more life-giving, tangible, and eternal. And this transformation is especially needed with the people whom society says are, well, they're unlovable or they're unreachable. And therefore, they are untouchable. But when we do the work of integrating healthier ways of suppressing the ego by embracing our and others' values and dignities and worth as souls, we transform. And we also transform others through our presence, our grace, and our understanding with forgiveness, gratitude, and love. That whenever I was teaching students to go into the field of mental health counseling therapy, I would always stress the importance of our presence. And I would always say something like, never underestimate the value of your presence, because nobody's going to share with you their pain or frustration, confusion, or whatever it is that they're struggling with unless they trust you. And it's not so much what you say, but how you sit with them. How do you sit with somebody in their pain? You sit, you bear witness to it, and you really watch what you say. But so never underestimate the value of your presence in any given moment. and people who are wounded and are in need of healing, they can walk into a room and they know instantaneously who they can trust, who they can talk to. They might think for, split seconds, that person, I can talk to them. I can't talk to this person over here. This person is safe. That person is not. And it's not a judgment, but they can feel through the presence of what's safe and what's not because of the wounds that they're carrying that they experience in and through their relationships. Or maybe let's put this another way. One of my favorite Dutch priests and professors, Henri Nouwen, a great author, he puts it this way. He says, just by paying attention to what's going on around us, we discover that there are people who heal each other's wounds, forgive each other's offenses, share their possessions, foster the spirit of community, celebrate the gifts they have received, and live in constant anticipation of the full manifestation of God's glory. So don't get trapped in this illusion that you have to go in search of something that you already are. So discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world, because you and I both know that is greatly needed in today's world. And as I stated before, if you would like to call in and be part of this show, again, I'll just give you that number again. It's 888-627-6008. And I really want to hear what's on your heart tonight regarding the show. It's entitled Blockheads, Knots, and Oneness: Dissolving the Illusions of the Mind. I kind of had fun with that title. How many of you out there have ever read the book, The Tao of Pooh, as in Winnie the Pooh? Okay. Now, the Tao or the T-A-O or Tao, okay, originated with Lao Tzu. He lived somewhere around 500 BCE, and he viewed the world as a teacher of valuable lessons in that we appreciate, learn from, and work with whatever happens in everyday life. And we have to be paying attention. We have to tune into it. We have to be aware. But we also not only have to be open, but we also have to be teachable. Because in a very subtle way, the Taoist principle of Pu, or PU, I don't mean that like it's stinky, but it's capital P, lowercase u, is more like puh, like you're puh. You're blowing or with your breath, a feather. Let's just say just puh. So with the Taoist principle of puh, it's translated into this image of an uncarved block, an uncarved block of wood, meaning that things in their original state carry their own natural energy and power. And keep this in mind when we start talking about who we are in our original state as a soul. So when you manipulate that wood, or let's say you carve the block, you may think that the wood has lost its energy. It hasn't. It's just changed its form. And yes, once we carve or cut the wood, we can make all kinds of beautiful items from it. We can make tables, bed frames, coffee tables, dressers, wardrobes, and for all of the beauty and more. All of these things have one thing in common. They are all wood in their original state. Okay. So let's bring this idea of understanding or seeing things for what they are into the world of humanity. Okay. So let's say that we, at our base substance or existence, we are souls. Okay. We are not the bodies that we see in the mirror. Now, yes, we can see ourselves when we look in the mirror, but that's not really who we are. We have a body that needs to be cared for. It needs to be fed. It needs to rest, and it needs to be given medicines when it gets sick or diseased. But we are truly souls at the end of the day. In fact, all day long. The body is just a form. Well, let's use another analogy here, okay? Imagine you have a beautiful scarf, Okay, and this scarf has several knots in it. Knots, knots. Now, to fully see ourselves as a soul, we must dissolve the knots in the scarf, as it were, and get rid of the illusion that we're nothing more than what we observe through our five senses. And we are so much more than what we are led to believe through our mind's interpretations. Now, despite the knots, the scarf is still a scarf. Despite our human form and gender and skin color and age and height and weight and shape and so on and so forth, we are still a soul. But can you imagine what a difference it would make in our world if we all interacted with one another as divine souls with the capacity for divine love? And unfortunately, you and I both know that sometimes we just see the opposite. Because all these externals that people focus on have created these isms in our lives. We have ageism, sexism, genderism, so on and so forth. But when we can dissolve this illusion of the mind, when we untie the knots, as it were, we begin to understand one another in a whole new way. And it starts by listening to one another's stories. That we have a lot more in common than, we look at the externals and say, I can't relate to you. You didn't grow up in the same neighborhood. You're not of the same background. You don't worship the same way that I do, and so on and so forth. But we never get below the surface of just let's acknowledge one another as souls, and then let's go from there. It's interesting that many theologians and scholars and scientists down through the centuries have really struggled to define the soul accurately, let alone what is our relationship with ourselves. Now, therefore, without trying to muddy the scholastic waters, here's my definition of the soul. Okay, it is the purest essence of us that exceeds all physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. I mean, take away everything else in our lives, and it is our soul that's a divine mirror of the soul of the universe. And it is the soul that God sees when God looks at us. Or, in another way, and God puts it, before you were born, I knew you. Now, we have no idea what that looked like, but we do know that before we were born, we were formless, and our bodies gave us form. And the soul is not just something we have because of being created, but instead the soul is who we are authentically. We're not merely bodies that have souls. We are divine souls who have bodies. Because in a sense, our mind and our body provide the form, that is, the breath, the matter, and the movement. The mind and the body provide the form to our soul, and the soul is formless. And yet, many people still believe that there's nothing more to us than our mind and our body. I mean, after all, our physical nature strongly contends for our attention all the time, in terms of I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm tired, I'm in pain, I'm sick. I need to procreate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And how much of that is driven by ego? Well, ironically, we may often misunderstand an all-important lesson as we try to drown out the soul's cry for that divine connection by focusing instead on what our egos are projecting at any given moment. And yet, wasn't it the Apostle Paul who states in the book of Romans that we need to be transformed by the renewing of our minds? Absolutely, we do. But it's the cry of the soul in each and every one of us to fully realize that we are primarily souls and we long to have that connection and reconnection with God. I keep sharing this almost every broadcast. One of my all-time favorite jokes is like people, who want to be enlightened, or they're trying to be clever, they go up to a hot dog vendor and like, make me one with everything. And a wise hot dog vendor will say, I can't do that. I can't, in fact, nobody can make you anything, you know, because you already are one with everything. You just don't know it yet. We just don't know it yet. And that's what it creates this illusion that we are disconnected from God. And we can become disconnected with the understanding of we're all souls when we judge, when we give in to, let's say, the, oh gosh, you know, our physical nature. And yes, we have to take care of the body. That's not what I'm saying here. But there's so much more below the surface that tries to drown out the cry of the soul. And regardless of whether or not we have suffered trauma, paying attention to ourselves as souls and listening, especially to the inner cry, moves us out of the illusion that a mind-body consciousness rules. Important as they are, the mind and the body are merely vehicles. If you were to realize a higher consciousness, the awareness of being a soul. Because when we listen attentively to our soul's cry, we do become aware that everything we truly desire, everything, can never be reached by the mind and the body. Because these are all driven by ego and selfishness and fear and pain and pleasure and so forth. Now, that's not to say that the mind and body are evil. Well, you see, you know, and the soul is good, but this kind of duality is what drove people in medieval times to really punish themselves with physical wounds. I mean, they would just whip themselves till they bled, believing that they could suppress their ego and physical desires to become more righteous and holy in the eyes of others and God. But for all of their efforts, this is to misunderstand who we are as souls and the concept and application of divine love. Because we can never attain higher levels of God consciousness, as it were, through the mind and the body, because these forms are limited. So let's take this analogy of, you know, untying the knots one step further. Okay. How many of you out there have ever seen the movie What About Bob? Okay. It's a funny movie. It's a classic comedy. What About Bob? And one of the more memorable scenes, I think my favorite scene, is when Dr. Marvin, who is a psychiatrist played by Richard Dreyfuss, has just had enough of his patient, who his name is Bob Wiley, who is played by Bill Murray. And, you know, Dr. Marvin just wants to get out of town and get away from Bob. Unfortunately, Bob follows him on his vacation. Major red flag. And when he could no longer take the day in and day out antics of Bob, Dr. Marvin leads him out into the woods and he ties him to a chair all rigged with a timer and bombs and so forth. And Dr. Marvin tells Bob not to worry because this therapy is called death therapy, which of course is not a real thing. However, as time ticks away, Bob has this light bulb moment when he realizes that just as he must untie the knots in the rope that has him bound to the chair of bombs, so too must he untie the mental and emotional knots that keep him bound to his, let's call it, stinking thinking, lest he implodes. Great, great scene, you know, and not a bad way to get across a deeper message, you know, quoting from the band The Eagles, about how often do we live our lives in chains, but we never know we have the key, you know, figuratively speaking. Dissolve the knots in your life that keep you from realizing you are a beautiful soul, because this is who you are. Now, one of the things I run into most when counseling others is the need to let go of a former concept or a philosophy or an expectation or an assumption that no longer serves them. I mean, again, let's go back to, let's call it stinking thinking or cognitive distortions. A lot of times, what we think isn't real. And stinking thinking is, just to give a little bit more of a context here, is a term often used in 12-step programs to refer to these negative patterns of thought that add fuel to the fire of addictions. And these thoughts sabotage your ability to see the world clearly and to take responsibility for your actions, as well as learning to redefine your life without your addictions. So it's kind of this process of unlearning, relearning. Okay. And a lot of the time, this process of healing involves an awareness of these inaccurate but very personal beliefs that no longer serve us in healthy ways, such as, let's say, when we walk into a room full of people who are laughing and talking, but the minute they see us, everything goes quiet, except for a few crickets we hear in the corner. And we immediately assume that everybody was talking about us, or maybe they were making fun of us, or maybe they were just gossiping that we have done something wrong. Okay. And another example is, let's say you get a 6-month or a yearly evaluation, okay? And your supervisor boss says, "Tony, you're a great employee. You're on time, you do quality work. In fact, I wish I had 10 more employees just like you. However, there's one little area I just would like to see you improve in." And Tony comes away from that meeting thinking that he's the worst employee there ever was, because all he can focus on is that one area that was criticized or critique, not the other outstanding areas of his work. Well, at any rate, we often believe that what we see and hear is all that there is to see and hear. Okay, again, but this simply is not the case. And so for us to see things as they truly are, such as the block of wood, the uncarved block of wood, or the scarf with no knots, we need to dissolve the delusions in our minds, especially when it comes to understanding and embracing ourselves and others as living souls. So my teacher in India once shared a lesson on the Vedanta concept of laya, which means to dissolve, especially to dissolve the delusions of the mind and our misperceptions of our experiences. And he stated that the mind just basically interprets what it sees and hears and tastes and touch and smells as the truth. But these senses can in no way reveal the truth of our existence. So think about it another way. So let's say, suppose we're walking by a demolition site, where workers are just dismantling a house. I mean, they're just raising it to the ground. And once the house has been demolished, let's say they're going to be left with bricks. Okay. And what if these workers dismantled even the bricks? What are they left with? They're left with the house's original clay. Now, to the mind, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, but they're no longer objects to be seen and held and heard and so forth because they've returned to their basic substance, let's say clay. And all things have this capability to be understood as having once existed in their original substance. And yet, the key to dissolving this delusion in our minds about what we can see and hear and feel and taste and smell as real is to recognize an object's original state or substance. So let's say we look at that table that was made out of wood, okay, and we say, "Oh, this is really beautiful." But can we take a step back and realize the wood is its true nature? So as we look at others and we engage with others, are we able to see them and are we able to engage with them as souls? Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Hauck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, where we have been discussing the theme of blockheads, knots, and oneness, dissolving the illusions of the mind. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about understanding objects in their original state, you know, such as a wooden table or chair that was originally an uncarved block of wood. Now, I also shared that Vedanta, the concept of laya, also means to dissolve. You know, it's especially relevant when it comes to dissolving the delusions of the mind and our perceptions of our experiences. And, you know, basically, our minds interpret what it sees and hears and tastes and touches and smells as truth. And he even tells us that. Like, yeah, what you see, that's real. Or what you hear, that's real. But these senses can in no way reveal the truth of our existence. Okay, so I just shared right before the break. I'll share it again because it's just a great analogy. Suppose we walk by a demolition site, okay, and workers are dismantling a house. Okay, and once they break it all down and everything, let's say that they're going to be left with bricks. And if the workers dismantle even the bricks, okay, they are left with the house's original state. That is clay. Okay, the bricks cannot, you know, cannot be there without the clay. Now, to the mind, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, okay? But they're no longer objects that we can see and hear and touch and all that good stuff because they've returned to their basic substance, clay. Okay? And all things, you know, have this ability to be understood as having once existed in their original substance, especially us. And yet, we have to recognize that what our minds tell us about what we can see and hear and feel and taste and smell is okay, but it's not real. You know, and to dissolve that illusion is to recognize an object's, let's say, original state or a substance. So as we're engaging with others, as we're understanding ourselves, can we see them? Can we engage with them as souls? Well, as I said earlier in the broadcast, many theologians and scholars and scientists throughout the centuries have struggled to define what is the soul, let alone what's our relationship to it. And that's, you know, an illusion type question right there, because the soul is that purest essence of ourselves that goes way beyond all physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. And you take away everything else in our lives and we're left as a soul. Just like if you dismantle the bricks, you're left with clay. And you know, again, it's our soul that's a divine mirror of the soul of the universe. And it is the soul that God sees when God looks at us, okay? So the soul is not just something we have because of being created. It's who we are authentically, okay? We are divine souls who just happen to have bodies, okay? And yet we may still believe that there's nothing more to us than our mind and our body. Well, down throughout history, you know, physical alchemy has always focused on altering, let's say, the chemical properties of a solid matter, such as turning lead into gold. Yeah, that's a classic example right there. But spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing your vast spiritual self, which is being hindered within you by the unrefined parts of yourself, such as your fears, or limited personal beliefs, or self-loathing, or unforgiveness, and so on and so forth. Because spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted, if you will, and it's ongoing. It's this continuous purification of our hearts, much in the same way a smith will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains a raw mineral or a metal. And as the heat increases, dross or impurities rise to the surface where they're skimmed off, making the metal purer than what it was before. And this process is repeated again and again and again until the metal reaches its finest purity. And so we too are going through this process of a spiritual alchemy of authenticity, let's just say. And how often does it feel like the heat is being turned up through our past and current events, or even past and current events throughout the world? And therefore, when going through a process of a spiritual awakening, sooner or later, we are going to be confronted with the fact that there seems to be so much more to ourselves than the reality we are living in and what we have grown accustomed to. Don't ignore those little nudges. Don't ignore those little tugs on your heart. They're there for a reason, reminding us, find who you are, see who you are. What is getting in the way of knowing yourself as that soul? As we go through life and we depend on our experiences, we start questioning what used to be true for us. Okay, so here's a good example. Let's say since childhood, we have a certain way of seeing ourselves, or we have a certain way of seeing others, or we have a certain way of understanding God and the world at large. And when, not if, when we go through an experience that shakes us up or shatters those assumptions, we feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. And we don't seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone which way is up. I mean, we can be left pretty much broken. We don't know what's going on. We don't know where to turn, so on and so forth. And this can be a very unnerving state or place we find ourselves in, especially if we feel like all that we've known about ourselves is now starting to crumble and evaporate. I mean, we can become so unsure, not only of ourselves, but also whether all that we see is all that there is. And, if we can weather those storms, we may also discover something greater than ourselves, which is tugging at our soul. I mean, call it a stronger nudge from God, or a more intense dimensional energy, or even a hunger that resonates deep within. And it compels us to go and search to discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go on this journey, which actually is a journey within, it's not a physical journey, okay? Even though a lot of people say, well, I need to go here to discover myself. No, you need to go inward to discover who you are. And the first thing we're going to discover when we turn inward like that are the things we need to, let go of, and we need to transform them to embrace higher, more intense spiritual dimension. In other words, who we are as a soul. So rising above those negative mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual triggers also that keep us from experiencing the fullness, especially of unconditional love. And this phenomena it's clearly at the heart of, let's say, a multi-dimensional understanding of spirituality. Now, in my life, okay, perhaps one way I have come to truly understand oneness is through healing intergenerational trauma, especially when I hear the cries of the weak and wounded. Because listening to the cries of our ancestors, let's just say, compels us to heal our relationships with them and begin interacting with people on a soul level. Now, ask yourself this: is self-realization of who we are as souls, is that powerful enough to transform social systems that promote oppression, prejudice, and control? Let me ask that question again. Is self-realization of who we are as souls, is that powerful enough to transform social systems that promote oppression, prejudice, and control? Well, many people would say that the more we understand the history of humanity, the more we understand that transforming systems is impossible. In fact, some consider systems suspect in and of themselves, and therefore they choose to work outside of the system. And then there are some people who choose to remain within a system and work with individuals to create change. Now, whatever your preference is, you can say for certain that our realization of being a soul and living as souls in this world transforms people. It transforms them from an ego-driven consciousness to a soul consciousness, which in turn impacts historical and contemporary systems. And I'll never forget the time that a former student of mine reminded me of this potential effect by saying that we ought never allow the coldness of an institution to discourage us from finding the warmth of individuals. And this is a very profound statement. Because indeed, the more we embrace the fact that all people are souls, the more awakened we are to change the world. And although we can understand the historical impact of, let's say, governmental or educational or religious or other social systems, it is within their dysfunctional interconnectedness that often reinforces contemporary negative behaviors of oppression, prejudice, and abuse of power. But if we truly believe we can create lasting changes in ourselves and others and the world, then we have to admit that transformation is a process of awareness and integration to live within the present dysfunctional systems that resist change. Okay, now another example here. Dysfunctional systems always seem to perpetuate intergenerational trauma because they typically distort the message of what they believe really endows humanity with its value, dignity, and worth. Okay, and furthermore, humanity's motivations and behaviors are inaccurately assessed, perhaps along the lines of productivity and consumerism, over and against placing value on a person as a soul. Well, unfortunately, if the dysfunction or illusion is never addressed and healed and removed, the ramifications of these attitudes and behaviors affect generation after generation after generation. In fact, some present systems have been broken and dysfunctional for many generations, and if they do not change, they will continue to deteriorate. And however, transformation is always possible because systems are made up of individuals. And indeed, their dysfunction in interpersonal and intrapersonal relationships will always come to light because their thoughts, speech, and behavior arise out of their emotional, psychological, and/or spiritual wounds. And moreover, such wounds hinder people from awakening to who they truly are, and therefore they remain unable to embrace their soul consciousness. And this inability is not a fault, it's not a character flaw, but it just might be where they are on their life path. A path that can be certainly liberated towards self-realization at any given moment. But you know, down through the centuries, shame and guilt have also been used in our society as a means to control people, to shame them into feeling a certain way about themselves or to make them feel guilty, to get them to do something. And regrettably, society has, on more than one occasion, interchange these words to convey its disappointment in others. So, for instance, people often hear, shame on you, or you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Immediately, there is a sense that something is wrong and someone is disappointed. and with shame, people internalize that message to mean there's something wrong with me, or I am flawed in some way. I don't measure up to another's expectation of how they see me. Now, guilt, on the other hand, is not necessarily a bad thing. It's not necessarily a negative feeling. It does communicate to us that we did do something wrong and gives us an opportunity to perhaps go back and fix the error or ask for forgiveness or whatever the situation calls for. And in this context, guilt can also be healing and life-giving in relationships. And yet, guilt can also be manipulated by some to coerce others into doing what they want. I mean, we might hear certain phrases like, "Well, after all I've done for you," or "even so-and-so thinks this about you." Do you hear the guilt? So, moreover, shame and guilt, as well as stereotypes and prejudices and sexism and classism and racism and so forth, can find no place in the language of the soul. Because once we become firmly rooted in our soul consciousness, manipulation in the form of shame and guilt no longer affects us. It just doesn't stick. Because therefore, in this one example, the more we see ourselves and others as souls, the more we can transform and transcend beliefs that no longer serve us. And when this occurs, not only do relationships take on a healthier tone that transcends time and space, but we also understand the futility of waiting for systems to change. Systems simply just cannot do this on their own. And I'm reminded of the quote from the British author David Icke, who states that if you are fighting a system, then you're still caught in it. It's not about fighting the system. It's about ceasing to hold the system together. We're all beautiful souls, made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. Never forget that. Don't let anybody tell you that you are less than those things. Because we may struggle to accept this truth because our attention can be often diverted to outward appearances and behaviors. Well, if you want to be somebody in this world, you have to dress this way. Or if you really want to matter in this community, then you have to follow this, and so on and so forth. So in other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. You know, there might be times where we get little glimpses of it, but never attain the full extent because of the physical, emotional, and psychological issues that cloud our vision of who we truly are. Okay? And diseases and illnesses do afflict us in the body. Absolutely. We do feel physical and emotional pain with so much intensity at times that we believe that it's going to break us in two. You know, because at times our lungs may struggle to take a breath, or hunger and disease can cause our stomachs and intestines and bones and muscles and blood to scream in agony. These experiences might even make us question whether or not we are the souls God has created. However, this illusion lies not in the suffering, pain, and agony we experience, but rather the illusion is found in our perception that there is nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, and physical body. Indeed, physical and emotional pain and suffering can temporarily drown out the cry of our soul, but our soul is never silenced. And furthermore, the truth is that our greatest strength as souls lies in our ability to transform and transcend these physical, emotional, psychological limitations. For as much as history has shown us the horrific crimes that humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories, if not more, of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and reclaim its soul. Can we see God in our everyday lives? Absolutely. It's just a matter of looking for God, often in the most unlikely places, and often through the most unlikely people. Unfortunately, throughout the centuries, there has been a need to control people's quest to experience the fullness of God in those unlikely places and among those unlikely people. And spiritual discoveries and encounters have often been attempted to be squelched, let's just say, out of fear that they occur outside the bounds of what is deemed appropriate or timely. Well, in fact, there has always been an emphasis on people looking for God. And if they look similar, act similar, think similar, and worship God in a similar fashion, yeah, okay, you're going to find God. But anyone who has ever felt the transformative power, the experiential transformative power of God, has sooner or later had to contend with transcending those bounds imposed by societal structures. And it could be educational, it could be religious bounds, it could be judicial bounds, or whatever it might be. But one thing we have to keep ever present before us, it's not the physical structures that need to be transcended if we are to grow and evolve into embracing ourself, our vast self as a soul. It has always been the prejudices, the attitudes, and stigmas that have galvanized those structures for centuries. You know, all in all, I've shifted my prayers over the years. I've shifted it from my head to my heart, especially by meditating on the soul connection that I have with God. And when I did this, after a while, I started to see and hear all the layers of woundedness in me. Again, not in a malicious way that God brought to my attention, but instead being shown all the things that needed to be healed, the psychological, emotional, and spiritual wounds that clouded my sight and clouded my sound of seeing and hearing the Spirit of God more clearly in my relationships. Grace-filled moments, teachable moments, life-changing moments. Please keep in mind that as we serve one another in the physical sense, we also serve others in the spiritual sense. We often make it harder or more complicated than what it needs to be, because God says to us, do what you can do. I'll take care of the rest. And if you ever want to see the extraordinary grace of God, pay attention to what's going on in the ordinary. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me tonight. And I will be back right here on BBSRadio.com station one in, let's say, 2 weeks. Okay, with just another, oh gosh, just another wonderful broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity. So until that time, everybody out there, be safe, behave yourselves, and be one with each other. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.